Welcome to Legal News and Review, recipient of the Florida Bar Award of Excellence, and featuring Michael Santucci, co-chair of the Intellectual Property Division of the Broward Bar, from the law firm of Santucci Priori, practicing intellectual property, business, and entertainment law and litigation, located in downtown Fort Lauderdale. Legal News and Review, the only real problem solver radio program using the law, with your moderator, Philip Bell, and hosts and legal panel attorney, Gary Singer, chair of the Broward County Bar Association's Real Property Section. Gary Singer is board certified in real estate law and a syndicated columnist from the Sun Sentinel. He is an expert in his field of practice. Now, here's your moderator, Philip Bell.
On the docket for today's broadcast, medical malpractice has become the leading cause of death here in the United States. My goodness, the leading cause of death in the United States. But why are there so few attorneys willing to take it on? Interestingly enough, 13% of all medical malpractice cases here in the United States are against dentists. And now a lot of doctors are going what's being called going bare, meaning they're not going to pay for malpractice insurance. Addressing these issues surrounding medical malpractice from the law office of Mark A. Glassman, Mark Glassman. First, I'd like to welcome our legal panel host. Good evening, Michael Santucci.
How are you, Phil?
Another day in paradise. Right. And good afternoon, Gary Ostro.
Gary Ostro here sitting in for Gary Singer and myself as well. Thank you.
He's sitting in for two people.
Yes.
And Gary will be back in 2 weeks.
You want another chair?
I'm going to need one.
Hey, now. First of all, today's broadcast is actually being brought to you in part by Corporate Capital Direct. Banks are still not lending, and the online lenders may not tell you what you need to hear to make the right decision for your company needs. Get the inside edge for business financing, whether you need capital needs for inventory, payroll, general operating expenses, or even consolidate these expensive predatory debt loans or tax issues. It's coming up. Corporate Capital Direct can help you avoid common mistakes because they also consult and they don't charge for that. When seeking a capital solution for your business, get the inside edge for your business financing needs. Call Corporate Capital Direct at 800-261-6478 or you can go to corpcapdirect.com. And again, that's corpcapdirect.com. They're great people. I endorse them. People that I've sent to them for their needs, and they've helped them dramatically. And they're good people. I mean, and I thank them for their underwriting.
Well, Phil, I wanted to also remind my music clients out there and any songwriters, we're Legal News and Review. We're a South Florida-based show, although you can hear us anywhere in the world. We're on three stations now. We're 740 AM, 960.9 FM, 103.9 FM, Monday through Friday at 3:30 to 4. And we're also have rebroadcasts on the weekend.
That's right.
11:30 to 12, Saturday.
No, that's 12:30 to 1 on Saturday and Sunday. And also I want to welcome our tune-in listeners and iRadio Now. I'm starting to receive emails from them. And of course, we've always been on the wonderful iHeart.
The iHeart app. Yeah. But our, songwriters and local, we're a local show, local South Florida show, and we support local music. If you want to get your music on our show, send an MP3 to info@500law.com. That's info@500law.com. We'll listen to it and try to get your songs on the show and give you a little plug.
Absolutely. And we have connections to distribute it. That doesn't mean payola. What that means is that we get a chance to get it out there. You know, doctors have a duty to do no harm, but sometimes catastrophic mistakes happen, and not just by doctors, but other health practitioners. And today, we're very pleased to speak with, from the law firm of Mark A. Glassman. Mark Glassman, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Phil, and thank you for having me back.
Appreciate you taking the time, and it was a startling figure. I didn't know medical malpractice is a leading cause of death here in the United States, because, again, we go to our doctors to get well, and, again, the doctors are in charge to do no harm. But the first question that I personally have is, what are the grounds for medical malpractice lawsuit?
Well, medical malpractice is judged by what is often called, it's a term of art called the standard of care. Every medical practitioner, whether that be a doctor or a dentist, a nurse practitioner, a nurse, has to follow what is generally called the standard of care. The standard of care is that level of care that is provided out in the community that a patient should expect under a certain set of circumstances. And that's the standard by which we judge it. Now, there are often a lot of cases where there is a deviation or violation of the standard of care, but it doesn't cause any injury. And if there are no damages, well, then the violation of the standard of care is irrelevant because no harm, no foul.
That makes sense.
If I can jump in, so you just named the elements of a Med-Mal case. Would you agree you could have outstanding liability, you could have extensive coverage, but if the damages aren't catastrophic, that you're not going to go after a medical malclaim due to the expense of pursuing one? Would that be a fair statement?
That is absolutely a fair statement. And I've been on the show before, and I've talked to Phil and the audience about dental malpractice cases, and that is often the case in dental situations where a dentist may have deviated from the standard of care and the dentist may have broken a tooth, let's say. But the damages aren't that significant from a dollar point. So the amount of money a lawyer needs to invest in that case to get the outcome oftentimes will exceed what you're going after. So it's not a case.
So, but I noticed there was something, a note about you have a dental malpractice.
Yes.
Yes.
So how do you rationalize that? What am I missing?
Well, what you're missing is, you know, they talk about real estate. It's all about location, location, location. When you talk about malpractice, it's about selection, selection, selection. You have to be choosing the right cases from the business standpoint. A lot of people don't like to hear that out in the general public. There are those cases where a doctor or a dentist could have committed some wrong, but there's no damages there. Those are scenarios where I would often tell somebody, what you have is a legitimate complaint, but not a viable case. And often what I tell those people, your interests are best served not in the civil arena where you're suing for dollars, but rather, why not contact the Florida Department of Health, file an administrative complaint against that physician or dentist, against his license. Let the state do an investigation. The state doesn't care about dollar figures. The state just wants to promote good health, good medical care. So in those instances, I will often tell somebody, I give them the number. I even have a link on my website where those people can go. They call it the complaint portal. And it's right through the Florida Department of Health. And people get directed. They go to the Florida Department of Health, and online they could file their administrative complaint. And the claim is determined through the administrative process, meaning the end result is not money in the client's pocket or the patient's pocket, but rather discipline to the healthcare provider.
But why is it that I've had, you know, a host of PI attorneys come on, talk about a host of issues from product liability to the hip that you see the advertisement or the talcum powder for ovarian cancer. I've had them on. But I asked them, well, you know, did you also take medical malpractice? Oh, no, I won't take medical malpractice. They don't. There's only a handful of attorneys like yourself that do. Why is that?
It's because it's expensive. It's because they're not easy. Doctors in our community seem to enjoy a certain status. They get the benefit of the doubt often in front of a jury. And they're often looked at as higher than the rest of us. And they get away with maybe a little more.
Well, they get better tables at restaurants.
Oh, correct. And that's the status they enjoy. So these cases are not easy. We don't take the cases because they're easy. We take them because they're hard, because people need representation when the case or when the proof is difficult.
Mark, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Isn't it true, and I've seen this in my own limited personal experience, but when a doctor doesn't carry malpractice insurance, a lot of plaintiff's lawyers will say, I'm not going after this guy. He doesn't have insurance. Would you agree that's one motivation for doctors not to carry, or am I off base?
No, you're right on the money, and it's a conversation that I have with a lot of my colleagues all the time. We often won't pursue doctors or dentists or healthcare providers who are not carrying insurance. But here's the caveat to that, is that oftentimes these doctors are taking a big risk, and oftentimes these doctors are involved in cases that are spread among multiple medical healthcare providers. So they may get, while you may not choose to include them in a lawsuit, let's say somebody in a hospital gets substandard care by a multitude of different specialties. Well, all those doctors will be included in the lawsuit, and if that one doctor in that lawsuit doesn't have insurance, he has a whole host of problems because the other co-defendants are not going to let him walk. So it's a very risky maneuver for a doctor to go ahead and go bare.
For that reason you just described.
For that reason. There are a couple of other reasons. There are also, in a catastrophic case, I don't know if no insurance is going to stop somebody in a catastrophic case. And what doctors should be aware of is that if a judgment is against them for medical malpractice and they are unable to satisfy that judgment, their license is at risk and could be yanked. So they are taking a chance when they go without insurance. It's just like somebody driving on the road who doesn't have insurance.
The benefits could outweigh the detriment in light of the fact the benefit they may not be targeted. I have one follow-up question, and I don't know if this is the case anymore. I think it's been revised since. But if you pursued a doctor for a malpractice claim and you lost in the past, wouldn't you not be liable for the doctor's attorney's fees? Was that the old rule?
It's not the fees, but you could be liable for the costs involved.
Which could be astronomical.
It could be, yes.
Is that a deterrent? Did that act as a deterrent, in your opinion?
Well, I think what acts as a deterrent, or actually what levels the playing field, is a vehicle that you can file in court called a proposal for settlement. And that is something that's offered to both sides, both plaintiffs and defendants. It's something that encourages settlement. Really what it is that it's a formal offer that gets served on your opposing party. If, for example, a plaintiff situation, if I serve a proposal for settlement on a doctor for $100, if I can go against that doctor, prevail in the lawsuit, and get a judgment in excess of 25%, so a $126 judgment on a $100 proposal for settlement, now that doctor or that doctor's insurance company will not just have to pay the judgment, but also have to pay my attorney's fees. Now, it also works the other way, that if a doctor or healthcare provider serves that proposal for settlement upon my client, and they could prevail in the case or get a judgment 25% less than what was offered, in the $100 case, $74,
right,
then they could have a judgment against the person, not the lawyer, but the person. But I often tell people this, and I have this conversation with my clients all the time, which is that if you don't have a pot to piss in, what are they going to get from you?
Nothing.
Right. So that's, you know, they also, you always have to think about who you're representing or who the other side is. That's why these proposals for settlement often are a very effective tool for plaintiff's attorneys.
I've heard a lot of attorneys struggle through explaining how the proposal for settlement rule or the offer of judgment rule works, and they struggled trying to explain that to a client. You did that very well. You really broke
Absolutely.
It down simply.
I have a form letter.
Yeah,
I still don't get it. He's not reading anything, listeners. But, you know, dental malpractice, myself had to have a tooth removed in the back, and the dentist talked me out of trying to save. He says, it's in the back. You really don't need it, right? And then I get a letter several months later saying that they now do implants. He's not an oral surgeon. And matter of fact, it's a good price. It was only, I think it was like $475 for the implant, you know?
Well, I would tell you that I feel the explosion in my practice with regard to dental malpractice is directly related to the fact that there are cheap implants available out there in the marketplace.
Right.
And it used to be a time that this was a procedure that was reserved for the oral surgeon to
right.
do. But now there are dentists doing it. Dentists are permitted under the statutes to do this, and they find.
Well, what do they do? Take a weekend course? I mean, seriously.
Well. Often, yes, that's what it is. And it may
and
be
a leg off.
It okay. may be a week course as opposed to a weekend course, but that's yeah. really how these dentists are learning to do it. There's also, the technology has now come where a lot of these dentists can rely upon the machinery to make these very precise measurements. And so it isn't a lot of the human factors are taken out of the implant process.
Right.
But, you know, the machine is only good as the person inputting the information. And that's a lot of times what happens in these cases, which is that the operator of the machine that's making the measurements may calculate or have the machine not working properly, and then the measurements are wrong. And so you're creating a disaster. It's a disaster waiting to happen.
What made you gravitate, of all things, toward dental malpractice when the other areas of malpractice, just about every one, medically speaking, are probably bigger?
Yes. And for many, many years.
Do you have a dental background, by the way?
No. But my partner is Dr. Stanley Lane. Dr. Stanley right. Lane is an oral surgeon and an attorney. He was the
nice
head of.
Combo.
Yes, he was the head of oral surgery at Mount Sinai Hospital in New York City back in the 90s.
But did he come first? Did your interest in dental malpractice come first?
My interest in medical malpractice came first. Back in the 90s, I was a defense attorney. It wasn't until about 1999 that I switched sides.
So you were on the dark side.
I was on the dark side.
It's all relative.
It's where I got my training, you know.
Yeah.
So Dr. Lane and I are, I knew his family and he knew me. And when he was a, believe it or not, he's much older than I am. When
he became, must be really old.
Well, he exactly. He's much older than, he's going to listen to this and be upset with me. But he's a,
yeah, he knows where you work.
He's a little bit older than me, but he is a, he's a younger attorney than me as far as experience goes. So when he got into the law profession, he used to call me about law questions. And when I used to get these dental cases, I used to call him about the dental questions. And over time, we just been on the phone with each other. We saw each other at social events, and one thing led to another. And a couple of years ago, we got together and said, why don't we give this a shot? I still take on medical cases. I still take on PI cases, but there's been an explosion in the amount of dental malpractice cases coming through my door.
I think it's brilliant because you're focusing on an area that people don't even are not even aware of, and by doing high volume with an expert, maxillofacially or otherwise, you're you know, needless to say,
but
it's
listen
fantastic.
To this. Listen to this. This is one of his cases. I'll call him Charles G., who was 92 years old, who underwent dental work. During the procedure, the dentist dropped the dental tool down his throat of Charles G.
Ray Sipsa?
Yeah, and he aspirated into, he aspirated into his lung and ultimately, unfortunately, causing death. But limitations in Florida's wrongful death statute caused other firms to reject this case. The case was filed by a survival action by the firm permitting recovery. And is it okay I mention the amount?
No, please don't.
Okay.
But how much value
is there?
It's so
big you don't want him to mention it.
but my question is how much value, and I am being kind of facetious, but in a 92-year-old guy who obviously has no income and not much longer of a lifespan, how much could the value be based on the tables and the statistics?
No,
actuary tables.
It's a very fair question, and that was the problem with the case. But here's
you going to give us the answer?
Well, here's what you need to understand about the case. It's very complex with multiple levels. It wasn't brought as a wrongful death case because, as you know, there are limitations in that scenario. It was brought as a survival action. What a survival action means, it's the pain and suffering that person had to go through between the time of the injury and the time of the death.
Which was how long?
Which was 3 months. And what people don't, what you need to understand about that case is that this torque wrench was swallowed and went into his lung.
My God.
Well, they couldn't fish it out with a bronchoscopy, which is going down the throat with a little tool and grabbing
it
out.
Which is gagging you.
Which is gagging you, which is very hard. But what they had to do is that they had to actually crack a 92-year-old man's lung. And they could not massage the tool out of the lower lobe of his lung because it had migrated all the way down. So what did they have to do is they had to cut off that lower lobe of his lung.
Wow.
For 3 months, this man sat in a hospital bed gasping for air trying to survive.
Feeling like he's suffocating the whole time.
The whole time.
That's worth millions.
So that is and that pain and suffering, it doesn't matter whether you're 35 years old or you're 92 years old. You're still suffering.
Immensely.
And it wasn't about his death. It was about that 3 months of suffering because of that negligence. Wow. And that's the view of the case that a lot of people don't understand.
Well, the number is unnecessary. We can use our imaginations.
Okay. Okay.
Right. But medical malpractice, when it constitutes, I mean, my late wife died of ovarian cancer. They gave her Taxol, and they said it was cancer cells formed in her liver. You and I talked about that. And they thought it was breast cancer, you know, for the cells migrated, I guess. It turned out to be ovarian. By the time they found it, was too late as well. To me, that's a misdiagnosis, but is it?
Well, it can be. And with these cancer cases are very tricky. And what's tricky about the cancer cases is the causation side of it. And the causation side of it, what I'm talking about is there a difference? Because when you talk about cancer, you're talking about delay in diagnosis. How long was that delay? The old adage is the sooner you find the cancer and the sooner you treat it, the better. And to a certain extent, that's true.
Right.
But there are lots of factors that go into that. How aggressive is the tumor? How fast growing is that cancer? Is it likely to migrate or metastasize? So you have to take into consideration that a 3 month delay or a 6 month delay or an 8 month delay in a slow growing cancer may mean nothing. So if somebody gets a misdiagnosis in January and then gets a diagnosis in October, but the stage and status of their cancer has been relatively stable over that time, there are no damages. So you don't have the causative link to say that misdiagnosis caused a problem.
Is the, I don't know if I want to call it a misnomer, but the wall of silence concept about doctors really true, where unless there are hired professional experts that are retained for the purpose of the plaintiff or defense or both, that doctors are very rarely going to sign an affidavit, which I understand is one of the critical steps in a malpractice case, declaring that there's been some malpractice committed. Isn't it only certain guys who are known to do it, and you're just not going to get a doctor who may have worked along the same patient and knows there's been malpractice and is not going to sign an affidavit, a large percentage? Is that a fair statement?
Absolutely. You're three for three. Yes, absolutely fair statement again. What you're talking about is the subsequent treating physician, meaning in the case of a misdiagnosis where somebody goes to doctor number one misdiagnoses the person, says you're all healthy,
right.
Ends up some months later in the hands of doctor number two, and doctor number two says, my God, you have this major problem. And what I often hear from the client is, well, doctor number two told me that doctor number one missed it and messed up. I said, well, there's a difference between what he tells you in his office with the door closed and what he's going to tell me and put in writing. Mm-hmm. So we often can't rely upon the subsequent treating physician. When I have these conversations with doctors number two or these subsequent providers, they tell me, don't get me involved. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to hurt your case, but I'm not going to help you either. So, yes, we have to rely upon outside experts. And there are many doctors out there. They believe it's their duty to make sure that the standard of care across the country is being provided to patients properly. And those are good guys.
But they're the same guys. They're only experts who sign affidavits for $20,000 to say, yeah, not necessarily reflecting that they're being disingenuous, but that's their job.
Yeah.
But
it is definitely easier for the defense to find somebody to sign that affidavit supporting their care than it is for the plaintiff to find somebody criticizing
but
their care.
It's not just about doctors. There's nurse practitioners. The urgent care has grown tremendously. You see an urgent care practically in every corner of a neighborhood.
Well, the exploding healthcare phenomenon is nurse practitioners.
Right.
And what you have is a situation where a nurse is placed out in a satellite office somewhere providing care just like a doctor,
right.
Primary
CBS,
care.
CBS, I got my flu shot.
Yep, exactly, yeah. Right. I have a case where a nurse practitioner was in an office 20 miles away from the supervising physician. And during the 4 years that nurse practitioner was practicing in that office, never once did that physician come over to the office to deal with any issue. Now, the doctor may have been available by telephone, but in that four-year period, that nurse practitioner never called that doctor. There are a whole host. This is what you're talking about is a show and a half.
You're not kidding.
Right.
I can't believe we only have 2 minutes left. And one thing I want to throw out is it's just not – seriously, I'll do it.
Yeah.
But the issue also is nursing homes, and they could be found accountable.
Sure.
It's not just doctors.
There's a separate set of statutes that apply to nursing homes. It's Chapter 400 in Florida statutes, and we often refer to it as the patient's rights, the Bill of Rights for patients in nursing homes. And within that Bill of Rights, one of the rights is to receive proper and adequate health care. But there are a whole host of other things, not to be abused, those to get proper nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
So you can bring a lawsuit for medical malpractice in a nursing home if there's improper medical care, but you can also bring a claim under Chapter 400 for violation of those patients' rights. The standard in Chapter 400 is sometimes preferable to the standards that we would do in a medical malpractice case.
Mark, this is Michael Santucci. I do trademark registrations and trademark litigation. Your website, usalawsuits.com.
Is that not cool?
Great brand. I work with a lot of branding people, and that's a good one. USALawsuits.com. How else can people out there contact you if they have a medical malpractice case?
They can go to my website. I have a second website, which is more of the dental, which is floridadentalmalpractice.com. So people can find me there. And there's also my phone number, which is 954-874-3631.
You know, the process is, can they call you directly, or do they call you paralegal maybe takes a form?
No.
What's the process?
In my office, you call, somebody will pick up the phone.
Right.
But I'm the only one who evaluates the cases, myself and my partner, Dr. Lane. So you will end up talking with me. You may get a paralegal who will, say, hello, how are you? Give me your information. But as far as discussing a case, that's directly with myself.
That is a beautiful thing these days. That absolutely is.
As always, it's never enough time. So I want to thank our guest today, Mark Glassman. a Florida attorney practicing in medical malpractice and a particular specialty within a specialty, dental malpractice right. actions. Thank you, my co-host, Gary Ostro, criminal attorney here in South Florida.
Pleasure to be here. Criticize everybody at every
yes.
opportunity.
Legendary Gary Ostro. And, of course, Philip Bell.
Who's a legend in my own mind.
Yes, in your own mind, Phil. Always.
And I always remind everybody, if you're in the car, please put down your phone. It's very tempting. Put it down and keep listening to the radio. Listen to us every day, 3:30 to 4 o'clock every weekday, and 12 to 12:30 on Saturday and Sunday. And then again, 11:30 to midnight on Sunday night. We're all over the place now.
You got to be
so,
bored.
I heart. Yeah. And remember, everyone,
be legal.
You've been listening to the award-winning Legal News and Review, recognized by the Florida Bar's Award of Excellence. Legal News and Review, featuring Michael Santucci from the law firm of Santucci Priori, located in downtown Fort Lauderdale, and practicing intellectual property, business, and entertainment law and litigation. They can be reached at 500law.com or at 954-351-7474. To contact the legal panel hosts and guests, go to belegalbuzz.com. And to reach Gary Singer, board-certified real estate and syndicated columnist, appearing in 400 media outlets, including the front page of the Money Section every Monday in the Sun Sentinel, from the law firm of Gary M. Singer, PA, call 954-851-1448 for legal news and review. Remember, be legal.
Do you need an attorney? Call someone you can trust. The Broward County Bar Association, a not-for-profit organization, was founded in 1925 to foster courtesy, ethics, and professionalism, as well as to provide necessary legal services throughout South Florida. The Broward County Bar Association, 3,000 members strong, has attorney members that work throughout the entire state of Florida, as well as nationally and internationally. Remember, the Broward County Bar Association is a referral you can count on. Call the Broward County Bar Association at 954-764-8310 for all your legal needs. A referral you can count on. 954-764-8310 or contact online at browardbar.org. Non-lawyer spokesperson.